Remaker's Mark Episode 62, The Last Dragon. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our 62nd episode, part two, in fact, where we are discussing the Kung Fu meets Motown comedy, drama, action movie, The Last Dragon. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, did you have a boombox growing up? And if so, how big was it?
Hi, I'm well.
Hi.
Thanks for asking. It's good to see you because I can see you.
I know, right? We're in person here. It's weird.
I didn't have a huge boombox, but I remember a friend of ours having a boombox that was so big that it had a TV in it.
What?
Wait, yep. No, that's not a thing.
It was a thing. It was probably a 5-inch screen, but in the early 80s. It was impressive.
Sony was all about convergence for a lot of years, and there was like radios with TVs built in or TVs with radios built in. It was madness.
It was a thing that I remember.
Cats and dogs sleeping together.
Mass hysteria.
Nice. Jeremy Nielsen, how are you? And did you have a boombox growing up? And if so, how big was it?
I am quite well, and I did have a boombox, and I'm going to do something that I don't normally get to do. I'm going to explain it by saying it was about this big.
Oh!
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
He's showing a chart of the nation of Australia, and he pointed out about two-thirds of it, so that's quite large.
I had the classic dual cassette speakers that can come off type boombox. That was probably about, 2 feet? Is that about what that is?
Yeah, probably.
But it wasn't a good one. It was a cheap one because I had to buy it myself because my parents wouldn't buy one for me.
It was a Sony.
Panasonic.
Yeah. Hey, you take what you can get.
Exactly.
Torshorbor.
Lee Seventh Heaven, how are you? And did you have a boombox growing up? And if so, how big was it?
I'm well. And I had a couple. I had one in seventh grade that was maybe 2.5 feet long with the detachable speakers. And then I bought another one right after graduation that was just a little bit bigger that I could take to college.
Nice. Right on. And Mark Josting, how about you? Boombox? How big? How do you?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm fine, thank you.
Good
grammar.
And I did not need to have a boombox growing up because my older brother did.
Yeah.
And he would, getting up in the morning, he would play it loud enough so that he could hear it across the hall in the shower with the bathroom door closed.
And the shower running.
Oh, that's the most 80s thing I've ever heard of. And,
for more reference, we shared a bedroom, and and he's such older.
Such much?
Yes. That where he was in high school when I was in middle school, which meant that he was getting up like 2 hours earlier than I was.
Ooh.
And this is when he was playing the music so loud.
Nice.
What were his musical tastes at that time?
Eclectic. There was Beastie Boys, Iron Maiden, Kiss.
A lot of quiet, mellow acts.
House of Pain.
Culture Clubs.
Nice. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine day. It's not even evening. It's weird. We're recording when it's bright out. It's very strange. And we are at the Wicks Miller Cottage, as we are wont to do from time to time. This is the first time in 3 years that we've been able to like see each all together. It sounded like we were naked. Not wrong.
Whoa, that escalated.
Yes, it did. It was 2018 when we last met, 2019. The schedule stuff just didn't work out, which we thought, we'll get it next year, and then next year with COVID. So here we are. We are very excited. We've played a lot of board games. We played a lot of disc golf. We've hung out, and everybody's made amazing food, and it's been wonderful.
5.5 miles through the woods.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Uphill both ways. And actually, that's true.
Yeah, kind of.
That's actually legit. And it's been wonderful. So we are going to, as usual, be doing a recording here. And instead of kind of a special episode, the schedule worked out such that we would record our Last Dragon Part 2 discussion, which is what we're going to be doing today. Before we do that, however, Mark, this movie was your choice. Do you have something to recommend to us?
Turns out I do. I'm going to happily recommend disc golf.
Hey!
Seeing as we've spent this weekend playing 2 rounds of disc golf, and we are unofficially in summer now. I'm recommending this because it's a lovely, nice weather activity where you get to spend some time with your good friends and walking around in the outdoors and getting a bit of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And typically it's pretty cheap or free.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while you are looking for your disc and you notice that the ground gives a little bit, and then you take one more step, and then it gives a little bit more, and then the third step, you go up to just about your knee in muck, which is me today. But, you know, washed right off. No biggie. It's all good. It's good. I don't get dirty very often, so it's good for me.
Yeah, sometimes it happens, but I think it's a net positive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. I didn't die. It wasn't quicksand, which, you know, all of us were afraid of as children, you know, based on just the threat level read of quicksand across media growing up. But yeah, I was just fine. We were fine.
Nobody found a disc this year, but nobody lost a disc.
Yeah, net zero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is the best we've ever done.
Yeah, net zero, a wonderful ISP for people that don't understand the internet, as well as our disc golf disc ratio this year. Mm-hmm. Up next, we are going to be talking about what our next movie is. Andy, you are alphabetically next. Congratulations.
I am alphabetically next.
We come back round.
Thank you.
What are we going to be seeing next and discussing?
We're going to take a trip back to the 60s.
Ooh.
Back to the counterculture.
Hmm.
We're going to visit and then remake Easy Rider.
Ooh.
Okay.
All right. Nice.
All right. You might be going there.
Dennis Hopper.
He
directed that?
Peter Fonda.
Yep. So, Jack Nicholson.
Sure. I've never seen it.
I have not seen that one either.
Yeah. I haven't either.
Yeah. I don't think I have.
It's another one of those movies where I feel like I should see it.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity to do so. So Easy Rider, here we come.
Dennis Hopper was the director as well as star? Yeah,
we'll find out.
Okay. I think so.
All right.
I think it is.
We're going to learn as we go.
We're going to learn together.
I feel like this movie has a lot of trivia in terms of just like the craziness of the making of it. So I'm excited to hear that aspect of things.
Maybe it's a fictional piece of work. Maybe it's a documentary.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure yet.
Fair enough. Cool. Well, that's exciting. It's been a while since we've 60s it up, I think. That's good. Nice. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. So Easy Rider. We will, if we can find a streaming link, we'll put that in the show notes. And yeah, I'm excited for that. Now, before we continue with the further discussion of The Last Dragon, let's talk about part one and a quick recap of that. In part one, we recast four major characters as well as five minor characters. We're going to talk about the big winners for each of those. For the major characters, the role of Eddie Arcadian, originally played by Christopher Murney, we went with Jer's choice of Danny DeVito.
Yay!
Good job. Wow, that stereo is something else.
That's inspiring. That's inspiring thinking.
The role of Laura Charles, originally played by Vanity, we went with, again, Jer's choice of Rihanna.
Yay.
Nice. I like that. Very good. And then this is, I think, the first time ever we pulled this particular audible, which is for the role of Shonuff, originally played by Julius Carey, there were two results that tied, and instead of doing a tiebreaker, we just said, you know what, we're actually going to split this character up into two characters, Show and Nuff, played by Leslie Jones, chosen by Andy, and Keegan-Michael Key, chosen by Mark, respectively. So
I forgot about that.
I am so excited about that.
Yay.
Those two together are going to work some serious magic, and I can't wait for that. So Show Nuff is Show and Nuff with Leslie Jones and Keegan-Michael Key. And finally, the role of Leroy Green, or Bruce Leroy, if you will, if you're nasty, originally played by Timac, which sounds like what airplanes land on, we went with Mark's choice of Justice Smith.
So, I'm flying into the Timac.
And finally, the minor character for the role of Leroy's master, originally played by Thomas Akeda, we went with Lee's choice of Michelle Yeoh. So that adds some serious gravitas to that role, which is much needed because it's completely absent in the original. Now, as usual, we're going to be talking about a lot of things with The Last Dragon. We're going to be talking about the plot. We're going to be talking about the characters. We're going to talk about what we liked and didn't like, what we maybe want to change. And then, as always, we will be reviewing it at the end. Our show notes here, just to go behind the scenes, say the quote-unquote plot, ? Which I think speaks volumes.
Yeah.
Jer, you sort of summarized this. So let's have you be the chief summarizer-in-chief, and then maybe talk about the absurdity of that a little bit.
Sure. So, as I understand it, the plot of this movie is that an evil arcade owner
named
Arcadian, because in the 80s, your job is your name, wants to get famous, a not Cyndi Lauper pop star on a local MTV-esque live music show.
Seems,
and that's his whole plan.
Seems right.
And then somehow that escalates to a giant kung fu battle. The first thing I want to ask is, because I need to get this sorted out in my own head, is this movie a comedy?
No, not intentionally, but
yeah, I would say it was not intended as such.
Because there are definitely moments that feel like they were comedy beats that just didn't hit. And then the things that were funny didn't seem like they were supposed to be funny.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that.
I don't know if this was a comedy.
This was a movie, and my idea for this remake would be that it would lean hard into the comedy with some cool, much more legitimate martial arts fight scenes. So I feel like it would be a little more clearer that, yep, this is a comedy that happens to have some interesting scenes.
Yeah, I would see this as kind of in that Jackie Chan school of, yeah, exactly. That Jackie Chan school of kung fu comedy.
Yeah.
But I don't know what this was supposed to be.
Yeah. It is thin, for sure. The plot is absolutely thin. I don't really understand. So there's sort of two pieces. There's Bruce Leroy's story of, you know, him trying to discover the glow and trying to find his inner glowing self, which is great. And then I guess Shonuff is just like the Baron of Harlem? What's the
Shogun of Harlem.
Shogun of Harlem, of course. Jeez. Kind of a Baron too. Maybe.
And somehow Bruce Leroy is the last thing standing between him and total domination. Right. As the thug says directly into the camera, yes. Which was convenient. So we had that exposition.
And to that point, Bruce Leroy doesn't seem to care at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He just keeps eating his popcorn.
He's very right. With chopsticks.
With chopsticks.
I feel like there are a lot of things he doesn't care about in this movie.
I don't think there are anything that he does care about except finding the glow.
I don't think it's so much apathy as he's just, I don't think he gets it. I don't think he's aware of it.
He's not apathetic. He's naive.
He's a ding dong is what he is.
So Bruce Leroy, just in trying to sort of make his way through life, basically comes upon this show that his far too sexualized younger brother watches, which is basically like graffiti rock if you're an early hip hop fan, or Dick Clark American Bandstand, but it's for specifically Motown artists. Funny that, being that it was made by Motown.
In like one zip code.
Yeah. Yes. And so he ends up sort of falling for the VJ artist, or the woman who.
But does he?
Well,
I don't think he does.
She works real hard on him.
You know what he is? I realize what he is. He's a hipster.
Interesting.
Because he.
Say more.
He takes on. He's like an imposter hipster. He takes on this persona and rides it to its extreme, thinks it's cool.
Interesting. I don't think he thinks it's cool. I think he thinks it's everything.
I don't
which
think he thinks
either makes him
all.
More or less hipstering.
He was like, hipstery? I was into eating popcorn with chopsticks before it was cool.
like, that's fair.
I don't think I've seen a movie where the love interest has tried so hard to get the protagonist to fall in love with them and fail over and over again. Like Leroy's wearing some kind of shielding
just,
around his
heart.
I
can think of one movie, and I think this is very telling, that the movie is Dumb and Dumber.
Okay, yeah, that's a good reference.
So he is Dumb and Dumber. He's Alpha and Omega in one flawed character.
He's just asexual.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think it's really, to go back to the plot, I think, I have no idea how, when they were writing this, they got from a movie about martial arts and kung fu and seeking this sort of greater whatever power. And then they veered that the way we're going to get there is evil arcade owner, VJ, Shogun of Harlem, back around to kung fu battle. Like, that's a long road to travel.
I think they had two separate ideas. We're like, hey, let's do a neighborhood turf war kung fu movie. Mm-hmm. And the other writer was like, oh, wait, no, I got this idea about let's do a local VJ love interest thing. And they couldn't decide. And so they just decided somehow we'll make it work.
What was the name of the guy that did this?
Barry Gordy.
Barry Gordy.
I wonder if Barry Gordy, somebody gave him a script. He's like, I want to make a movie. And somebody's like, well, here's a movie about kung fu. And he's like, oh, cool. We got to get a lot more Motown stuff in here.
I mean, maybe. It's like, I'm Barry Gordy.
I think that's probably right on. I think that's exactly what happened. I'm just going to say that it is. That is exactly what happened.
And he was like, is there any way we could get Michael Jackson to play the lead? No, he's too busy. Let's get some other guy who's just as quiet.
We can't get Michael Jackson to play the lead, but we can get El DeBarge to give us the rights to use their music video for a little bit.
Yeah, there was a lot of lifted footage. Let's see how much we can get from Enter the Dragon without having to pay royalties.
I would say there's a solid 10 minutes of Bruce Lee movies that you see in the movie. And it's just them watching.
Videos.
Yeah. It's just them watching Bruce Lee, and basically being mystified by it or fighting amongst it. It's really weird.
And spliced in such a way that it's just a few seconds at a time.
That's right.
But there's a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, you brought up a very good question here, which is, you say it. It's essentially the crux of how the final conflict comes out, but it makes no sense. At the same time, it makes entirely sense given the weight of MTV at the time and what that meant to the larger world. Maybe.
Yeah. Basically, my immediate reaction to Jer's summary of the plot is, wait, Eddie Arcadian's motivation for eventually committing armed kidnapping is to get a music video aired?
Seems that way.
Yeah.
And it's the music video created by his
girlfriend?
Live-in friend? Cindy Lauper replacement?
She's a special lady friend, okay?
Yeah, special lady friend. Yeah.
And this is after the failed attempt to get his bodyguard into professional boxing?
Yeah.
So
he's all full of bad ideas.
He's an entrepreneur.
He just wants to diversify.
Right. Yeah.
It is vexing that is what the crux of the conflict comes off of.
And he seems to ride that tired, dead horse far past the point of realizing, like, maybe this isn't such a good idea. It's like, no, let's make two videos. Let's make two of them and let's see how well we do.
And based on his apartment, he seems like he's doing pretty well in the arcade business.
I mean, he's
why does he want to do any of this?
He's got like a piranha or something.
We never see it. It's a it's an opaque
in a murky tank.
Yeah, it's a murky goo
that eats T-bones.
That eats legs of beef.
Yeah.
Flintstone style. Rib bones.
He also has like five jukeboxes in his apartment.
He does. It's true. He just doesn't seem like he spends his money wisely.
Well, I feel like he probably, as an arcade owner, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think if there were jukeboxes in arcades.
But you got a lot of, you know, got lights and sounds and things like that.
You got an in the industry. I feel like there's just like one degree off is jukebox sales for arcade.
He took jukeboxes payment instead of money.
Oh, yeah. It's like you buy four Arkanoids, you get one jukebox free kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, and then jukeboxes come in later when Show Enough is trashing
the pizza place.
The Bruce Leroy's parents' pizza place, and he smashes the jukebox and they're like, we don't even own that.
Yeah, see, he rents them out.
Oh, no. That was his side gig. That was Eddie Arcadian's side
gig. So I wonder if this
gig.
Is all just like a hustle.
Wow.
I'm going to rent out, lease out these
jukeboxes.
Machines to restaurants, then you go break them
and rent to own jukebox insurance fraud. Interesting.
He just deals in things.
Plan.
He just deals in things that cost a quarter. Apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right on.
He must have just sacks of nickels and quarters in his house somewhere.
So I feel like, you know, when I was thinking about part of the plot and not the part around the arcade side of things, I actually thought that it was pretty cool. Like, I like the idea. I like the journey of trying to find the glow. I like the sort of aloof love story. You know what it reminded me of? The character of Bruce Leroy reminded me of people that are like virtuoso musicians, you know, like they did like Suzuki Method violin or whatever, and like all they did was practice, right? And I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he did. He hung out with his sensei, who didn't give him a lick of actual advice. Everything was based on fortune cookies.
Tried to actually kill him. It sounds like
he was shooting bow and arrow, shooting arrows at him. But I liked that part of it, and him basically being that aloof, I thought made sense given that kind of focus of it. Because having worked in a music school, when you see people that like all they did was practice and then all of a sudden they're around a bunch of other people, like they find their people, but it is a hard fought battle to get there. It is real awkward for a long time for a lot of people of like, oh, I have to hang out with other people now. I can't just do me. Like that's tough. So I get the aloof part. I don't think any of the Eddie Arcadian stuff makes sense. If I were to remake it, I would take that all out completely. Like, I kind of actually liked the Cyndi Lauper stand-in. I thought she was pretty great. She like really gave it her all, which I was very glad for. She really went for it.
I said in part one, I think she was the most interesting character.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Show Enough doesn't make sense, but I like him. Like, I feel like
the movie needed a villain.
Yeah,
he was exactly.
That
chaos
wasn't
engine.
A dum-dum.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they made the movie with Show Enough and then it was like 47 minutes long. They're like, oh no, we need 33 more minutes or whatever.
Like, Show Enough needed to be the villain in like the sequel.
Yeah,
you know, like Eddie Arcadian. There's too many villains.
Yeah, that's true. The Spider-Man.
They tried to get them to come together in the end somehow, but it's it seemed forced.
Yeah. Or he's the big bad at the end. Like he's, you know, he just overruns everything, which would make sense with Leslie Jones and Keegan-Michael Key.
Oh,
Keegan,
man.
Michael P. Key, excuse me, not Keenan.
Like Voldemort.
Oh. You know,
two faces on one head.
Yeah.
Sorcerer's Stone kind of thing.
That was so creepy. I can't believe that that was in the first Harry
a
Potter
Quirrell
movie.
And Voldemort thing.
So,
yeah.
So creepy.
Can you imagine? Keegan Michael Key wearing a turban and takes it off, and in the back is Leslie Jones.
Oh, I can't breathe in here.
That would be terrifying.
So good.
Back to your point, though, Kyle. I think that the concept of this movie of so often kung fu martial arts movies are about sort of this. They take place in very tranquil environments. And then to sort of transpose that into sort of inner city New York,
yeah.
That's a really cool idea. And put that sort of this kind of finding your inner peace and looking for this enlightenment, but then jab it into this like New York in 1985, where it's just nothing but violence and loud noise and everything else. Like, I love that. Like, I want to see that movie done better than this.
I think that's going back to our Shanghai Noon point. Like, that's what Shanghai Noon did. Was it took the really high quality martial arts stuff and stuck it in the Old West with Owen Wilson. And it was that,
wow.
That and, wow. And that was that juxtaposition that made it all of a sudden really, really interesting. And they still did all of the fight scenes well enough. I mean, it's Jackie Chan, he can do what he wants, but it was, you know, this kind of fish out of water element that I think was really interesting. So I agree with you. I think that would be one way of making this better.
It reminded me a little bit of what I think the Golden Child did really well, which was like a person out of time and place. But that was Eddie going into a different world, you know, like that was him kind of going into the world of magic or whatever. But I think the parts of him sort of doing the mystery, you know, like understanding the clues to try to find the kidnapped girls and like understanding what the Golden Child was like that. I love that movie. I have like fond memories of that.
Agreed.
And mm-hmm. I just understood or just learned that Christopher Dance, is that right?
Charles Dance
is Brother Noomsay, the guy from Game of Thrones and The Crown is Brother Noomsay. I had no idea. I just learned that on the trip this year.
Well, and I think that if they were going to lean into the comedy of Last Dragon, that the whole fish out of water concept of Leroy, they didn't do anything with it, and they could have really leaned into that whole like he's been training his whole life, he doesn't understand normal culture in New York in 1985 or whatever, and play into that fish out of water. But they didn't really do anything except him not understanding how to talk to girls.
He was just this, he had that such of a bland pumpkin face about him that he just was drifting through the world aimlessly. He was out of place no matter where or when he would have been, but not to the point that it was interesting.
Yeah.
They did riff on that a little bit when you know, he's actually fulfilling a plot point of trying to find his master, and he goes to the fortune cookie factory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The most questionably racist part of the movie.
And the Chinese guys are making fun of Chinese people?
And him.
I don't know.
They're kind of making fun
of
everybody.
They're making fun of him, for sure. But everybody else, including themselves?
Yeah.
That was vexing. I didn't really follow that.
Yeah.
Nor did I really care to. It's kind of
the whole point, why did he send him off to a... Is again, going back to, did the master just seriously want to get rid of him? And was like...
Right.
Go to the
or did he really not know that it was a fortune cookie factory?
Again, we don't know.
Yeah.
We may never know.
Yeah. So we've talked a bit about Bruce Leroy's aloof lover status. Let's talk about him as a kung fu master. How did that come across to you guys? I mean, I feel like that, you know, I feel like those two are equally represented in the movie. Let's talk training montages. Let's talk fights. Let's talk ass kicking, whatever. What did you guys think of that part of him?
It started off really promising, I think. Yeah. I mean, the intro to him in the movie is that training sequence where his master is shooting arrows at him. And he's breaking them midair.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was filmed really well, too.
I mean, he seemed, as a martial artist, he seemed to know what he was doing.
Yeah.
So, on that grounds, they had it covered pretty well. It wasn't clearly like, oh, he's fake playing. Like, he's got some skill there.
So we maybe have some qualms with the journey that he took to get to the glow in terms of some of the paths and some of the people that he came into along the way.
Well, yeah. And I think the fact that they don't even really explain what the glow is until all of a sudden he is glowing at the end. You're like, well, yeah. What's happening?
Yeah.
What's
going on? to go from the arrow shooting montage to the next scene that he's in is watching a Bruce Lee movie, eating popcorn with a kind of dopey, happy look on his face. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What is he supposed to be?
Yeah. They visit his school. So the school that he teaches at.
I wanted more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting.
That was
yeah.
fun.
Yep. I thought that was good. I feel like they definitely needed more of that. I'm just basically just trying to find ways to get the Eddie Arcadian story out of it. And so I feel like
the school to me was the part of the movie that had the most, I think this is supposed to be funny, and it actually is funny,
yes,
moments in it.
That's a great point.
So maybe that was what was standing in Shonuff's way, was like the school.
Oh, and now this is just like a Karate Kid ripoff, where it's like...
Yeah, I mean, well...
But flipped.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that actually is a good idea. Like, so think of, like, they need this building to build a high-rise or... Yeah, something like that. I mean, think of, like, Luke Cage story, right? Like, that kind of thing.
The only dojos around here, you got to have spike shoulder pads. That kind of thing. Yes. Maybe that was what should have been explained.
Where's your dojo more. Certified Converse.
I feel like the insurance on a spike shoulder pad training school has just got to be just really prohibitively expensive.
But if it's the exclusive club, it's the only club in town, you can kind of charge what you want.
That's fair. That's a good point.
They're selling the exclusivity.
Yeah, really. It's you want to be there.
Well, maybe Leroy was just putting up dojos all over town and showing up was just like, hey, I just want a slice.
Yeah.
But maybe we're giving the movie credit for things that aren't actually it.
We're trying real hard to fix this.
I'm being really generous.
I'm cool with that. I think we should go where we want to go.
I think we're seeing potential where this movie could be.
Yes. We're trying to fix it. And that's
rewriting
okay.
it better.
Yeah.
Stronger. Faster.
We have the technology, but we don't want to spend a lot of money.
Let's go back to the characters and specifically that of Laura, right? Is that the... Yeah,
Laura Charles.
Yeah, Laura Charles, played by Vanity. Another one named Wonder. What did you guys think of her?
I thought her performance was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
The situation around her may not be believable, but I think she was.
Yep. Agreed.
Agreed.
She seemed very casual for as much kidnapping and attacking was happening to her.
True.
Wasn't
a lot of police involvement.
None of that.
Yeah, she seemed pretty unflappable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like trying to get shoved into a car by armed guys who then get defeated by Leroy. And she's like, oh, wow. Thanks.
Well, see ya.
What's your name? Like,
I think if they gave her
an opportunity to flirt with him.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, my God, what was that?
Yeah, exactly.
Who were those men?
If they gave her character a little more maybe legitimacy in terms of being more of a celebrity instead of this hyper-local VJ. You know, to say maybe she is from MTV. I don't know if that's really even relevant anymore, but to make it so that it would make sense that there's a lot of people wanting to get into the club where she does her show and instead of just being like the local thing. So that could make it a little higher stakes and interesting and explain why she's got this really nice penthouse apartment and things like that.
Yeah. The fact that at the beginning backstage of her show with not John C. Reilly,
William H. Macy.
That's right. Little blonde-haired William H. Macy. The fact that she's backstage between like songs or whatever, getting her hair done, and she's the one booking all of the gigs. She's like in charge of everything. Really made it seem like a pretty low budget affair.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's running the show literally.
I think we could do a better job of making it feel like she is a force to be reckoned with. Because I mean, like if you think about the influence that she has in the neighborhood and like how many people are really into it, like it's a thing. Like it definitely felt like a big thing, but I think that did undermine it a little bit. So I feel like we could go farther with that, whether that be, I mean, you know, I can't think of anybody better to do so than Rihanna, right? Like having it be a musical persona.
Can we get William H. Macy in the remake somehow?
Sure. Absolutely. He's got nothing going on. I think Shameless is done.
Yeah.
Right? I think so.
He could just play his character from Shameless, who is essentially homeless in New York at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to Shonuff. Please.
Oh, yeah. We've been waiting for this.
I was so glad that the character or the actor that played Shonuff went where he did with it.
Oh,
like,
yes.
He was acting in a fully serious movie. There were no tongues in cheek. There were no Fs given. Like, he was big. he was given a description and he went with a flying arrow towards that description. And I'm so glad for it. What did you guys think?
I picture it similar to Slim Pickens in How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bottom
Line. Yeah, Dr. Strangelove.
He wasn't in character. He was just being himself. And I like to think that this was how Julius Curry just was. I like to think that he was show enough.
Yeah.
He brought those shoulder pads from home.
Yeah.
That's his wardrobe. His full on. I can totally see that.
You're not going to win an Oscar, but pretend like you are.
Yeah. He's
like, I'm in.
Done.
Yep.
Now, for whatever reason, he was all in. And I too, just adore that.
Yeah. And it really, it's a shame that the rest of the movie didn't rise to meet him because he gave us something.
He brought it.
Yeah.
In a movie that seems to have a very small stakes involved with it, he's the best villain that you could have asked for.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And did Kung
Fu. A neighborhood tough. Yeah, did the Kung Fu pretty well. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. that was, you know, I didn't feel like Bruce Leroy was like having to pantomime getting his butt kicked.
Yeah, exactly. The fighting, the actors at least looked like they had the basics. They knew what they were doing to a degree.
And the scene at the end when Shonuff got the glow, but just on his hands and he's doing like that claw gripper thing, like that was a great visual.
Yeah. Yes.
I wanted so much more glow.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the glow to be 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Get rid of all the Air Arcadian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. More glow.
More glow.
More glow. Agreed.
I think we could have seen the glow happen earlier. Like, let's say, show enough. Like, it gives us an idea of what it actually is. And we're like, ooh, he's got, you know, show enough has the glow. The stakes all of a sudden got raised.
Like he chops a building in half or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay, great. I mean, it's a little higher than I was thinking.
Or a jukebox in half. Straight in half.
Like he slices guns in half with his mind. But then to see a little bit of what it can do earlier in the movie so that when you see Shonuff get it in the final battle again, you're like, oh, now he's going to get his butt kicked. But then Bruce Leroy gets it too. That would...
Yeah. When he gets the full body glow.
I know. He gets the soul glow.
Better
glow.
Careful.
Oops, sorry.
No, that's fine.
Now, I'll offer a counterpoint that I did appreciate Shonuff getting the glow at the end of the movie, because you get a classic anime trope of the villain leveling up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he achieves his next form.
Okay.
Yeah, where you have a climactic moment, and you think that Bruce Leroy has defeated Shonuff, but then he comes back, and, oh, he's got the glow now, and... I think it makes it even more climactic.
I like that. Yep. That's a good point.
That final battle.
I think it could have been described better. One, the character of the sensei or the master or whatever could have been worth a damn, which he wasn't. And two, it could have been a tease.
Michelle Yeoh will take care of that.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. For sure. Yep. That could even be a flashback or something like that of a time where, you know, Shonuff was taking over a neighborhood or something like that. And you kind of like see the results of it, but not it itself or something like that.
That's a
good
idea.
Something that just alludes to it.
Or just, you know, yeah, that and, you know, everyone's saying how he had all these supernatural powers or something like that.
Be like, Yep.
Okay.
And kind of a like Thanos standing over a ruined civilization sort of feel.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. For sure.
But on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
But it's a jukebox.
How did he become the Shogun of Harlem?
Yeah.
Right?
I want to know that story.
For sure.
The show enough prequel?
Yeah. This should be a separate movie.
Where it's called Not Yet Quite Enough?
Yeah. First, he starts out as not enough, then just enough. And then he becomes Shonuff.
Shonuff.
Yeah.
He's going to movie theaters and getting his butt kicked at first.
Yep.
And then he's like starting to beat a few guys.
Yep.
Well, he's going into the wrong movies. He's
like, yeah.
Going to all these rom-coms. He's like, no, this is not working for me.
It's essentially like watching Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we talked a little bit about the confusing nature of this in terms of, is this a comedy? Is this serious? Where does this lie? I feel like this also has a very specific time and place, I think there's some broadness in that too. And certainly some things that we would maybe want to do a little bit differently with that. Jerry, you talked a bit about the comedy versus serious part already, but why don't you talk a little bit about the time and place aspect of it as far as when it takes place and where it takes place?
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed most watching it now is how much 1985 New York was in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just with the clothes, with the dialogue, with the surroundings, you could tell that they were just in this slum of New York recording, or I assume they were. That's not to say that a remake has to have that, but I really appreciated it about this movie and how, I mean, it's the same thing with Break-In and Break-In 2, like very similar movies to me. And they also had that, they just oozed 1980 whatever New York City and just how awesome and weird and kind of scuzzy all of that was.
So yeah. For a remake, would we want to do it in 1985 New York?
I don't know. That's a great question. I didn't picture mine in 1985 New York. I did picture it in New York, but present day.
I think if we were to do that, the prevalence of the MTV culture then versus now would have to be addressed, because like you said, it was huge in 1985.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
that,
right, yeah.
It would make sense that there would be this kind of video show that would be such a huge influence on a culture. Today, I don't feel like that would fly. There have to be something different, and
we are not
the right people to figure that out.
It would be club kids, or it would be like a like a music video night hosted by an influencer or something like that. And nobody wants that.
Nope.
No, not a single person.
But if it was Rihanna, like if Rihanna just played herself, then all of a sudden we got a movie.
You got a good point there.
Yeah. What about the time and place were challenging in this movie? What do you wish were done differently?
Yes, we did. We noted that, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, how the racial stereotypes portrayed in this movie were, I'm guessing, problematic even at the time of the movie being released. So that's something that we're going to have to address. I don't think it's a bad thing to mention things like if there was a Chinatown neighborhood, and if maybe there was, I don't know the geography of New York anywhere nearly enough to know if, like, would there be adjacent neighborhoods and maybe there was some tension there. And that's a realistic thing that could be addressed, but man,
So it's basically East Side Story. Like, it's, you've got two different populations going at it, but
West Side Story?
No, like, but on the East Side. You know what I mean? Like, not West Side Story.
I couldn't tell if
but,
you did that on purpose.
Oh, yeah, I totally did. Okay.
Does he know it's West Side Story? Kyle, I don't want to tell him.
And it was doubly interesting because the main character is not Asian, but has adopted all of this Asian culture and Asian mysticism and everything else. And so there were so many, like Andy said earlier, there are so many racial digs at him that were Asian stereotypes, and he's not Asian. So it's just like this second layer of like uncomfortableness to the whole thing. And yeah, I mean, like you said, I don't know that those were good then. They're definitely not good now.
No, I think say quickly, if we were to do something with that character, either we would have to strip away that a person completely adapting the dress and mannerisms of a culture that is not his or hers, and instead make that person of that culture, similar to our fish out of water topic earlier, or just get rid of that aspect of the character altogether. And I think that would be maybe a little more interesting, because to me, honestly, the fact that he wore all of this traditional Asian dress and acted this way was just kind of confusing. I didn't understand why it was happening. It seemed extra to the martial arts, knowledge seeking part of it. It just seemed like it was an affectation.
Well, and he was dressed in clothes that even the Asians in the movie weren't dressed in.
Yeah.
Like he was wearing a hat and outfit that were
like
kind of outdated stereotypes in themselves.
Yeah.
Like
that you would really picture odd. Someone working in the railway in the Old West or something like that.
Yeah. It was very weird.
I feel like there would be a great chance to go a little bit meta with it and talk about cultural appropriation. Like I could feel sort of like that training montage at the beginning where Michelle Yeoh is trying to, basically
kill him with arrows,
trying to best him, but you never see his face. And then at the end, you see him like putting on his, whatever kung fu outfit. I don't know what the right terminology is for that.
Gi.
I apologize. Ki?
Gi.
Gi, sorry. Delicious butter.
Yeah.
Yes. sorry. And then it pans up and you see that he's black, and you could just see Michelle Yeoh being like, crap. let's have a talk. It's time to have the talk. Okay.
Maybe, yeah.
You've been in here for a very long time. I need to tell you some things about out there.
Yeah. You've been in here since you were 10. That flew then. That doesn't fly now. And this is why. Like, I feel like that could be an acknowledgement of the original and yet a way to best it at the same time without taking away from his naivety and his aloofness. Like, I feel like that can speak to that without being, appropriation.
Mm-hmm. And it can still make him appear as a fish out of water. That's maybe less confusing and or offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
Lee, from a sort of genre side of things, you talked about kind of the lo-fi nature of the visual effects and what that was like for you. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, and I thought that that was maybe one way that the movie didn't hold up as well, just because I don't know if better special effects would have been available at the time. I tend
not
to think
for their budget.
Yeah,
that's fair.
But I tend to think that they could have maybe done a little bit more in the way of making it a little bit more visually interesting, because, I mean, the Star Wars movies had come out, so that technology was available. I think they were still, they were just at the very beginning of like the morphing tech, like they did in Willow, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Like the morphing.
That was maybe a couple stuff. Years later, 87, something yeah. like that.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. That was also Lucasfilm budget, too, which is.
Yeah. yeah. Like this is Ghostbusters era. This is, like you said, yeah. this is after
Terminator.
After yeah. Return of the Jedi, it's Terminator era. So, yeah, there was. If the money was present, they could have done much better than they did.
Yeah. yeah. I found it endearing, actually. Like, I kind of liked that the glow was as simple as it was. Like, they didn't turn into dragons. They didn't.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it wasn't like.
Speaking of. I agree with you, but why the hell is this called The Last Dragon?
That is never established.
It's never...
That's what was in the...
Yes!
It wasn't a piranha.
Yes.
It was that's, The Last Dragon.
In the tank.
Dragon, in the tank. Is what, in our, the parentheses got cut off on all the printings of the posters, so...
Yeah. We didn't realize that dragons are so small.
Yeah. we assume they're big, and that's just on us.
Yep.
Yeah.
I said it before, I liked the effect of the glow. I thought that it had a very... quaint, nostalgic goodness to it. A lot of this movie felt like a made-for-TV movie budget.
Yeah.
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 But in a good way.
I think, though, if, you know, with the lack of special effects in something like this, they could have ramped up the fight scenes a little bit more.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But.
And there was a decent amount of good martial arts in here.
Yeah.
Like they had some, like they had, what's his face? Ernie Reyes Jr., who is one of the most accomplished kid martial artists in the 80s, yeah. as far as motion pictures are
concerned.
I think
a lot of that has to do with the cinematography and the editing, that it gets down to when you're filming a fight scene like that, that's I think, a whole different technique than anything else, and I just don't think they did that part very well of it. Too many long shots or things like that, I don't know. That's
the other scene that makes me think that this was supposed to be a comedy, was that the final battle was a bunch of kids against... a bunch of bounty hunters, yeah. which were whatever.
Yeah, that was pretty weird.
That was the weirdest ragtag bunch of goofballs.
It was the crew. Hey, guys, go get those costumes on and run out on the stage and
come up with
those kids.
Persona on your way.
It feels like he meant to recruit bounty hunters, and he accidentally got professional wrestlers.
They accidentally cross-referenced the just out of prison
database.
That said, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, if you look at a still of what the bounty hunters look like when
they're wearing garbage.
they're wearing pajamas and it's not.
Yeah.
Again, quick cuts, editing. Yeah.
The gloves of the one where it's three fingers are just completely, it looks like RoboCop when the guy gets hit by acid. Like it's bad. It's real bad.
Gengar is literally just wrapped in bandages.
yep. Mm-hmm.
It's just gauze.
Yep. Yeah.
Like this is exotic, right?
Yeah. This is new.
What's the backstory behind your character?
No wonder
I was probably hurt at some point.
Like they had an old rusty C-3PO costume in the back. Like, oh, let's make that a new guy.
Yeah. No wonder everybody thought Boba Fett was cool. They're like, look at that guy. Don't look at the other ones.
pan away.
So let's wrap up as usual with our rating of the film. We're going to go a 1 to 10 scale, 1 being the worst movie you've ever seen, 10 being one of the best, and in a scale of your choosing. So, Mark, we'll start with you. Since this was your pick, and then we'll go backwards, feel free to take your time.
I'm going to give this movie 5 out of 10 shoulder pads.
Ooh, nice. Spiky shoulder pads.
Spike-ed shoulder pants?
Spike-ed.
I just said shoulder pants.
Shoulder pants.
That's where I wear my pants.
Yeah. That was an 80s trend I'm glad went away. When everybody was wearing Jordache shoulder pants.
Yeah. They were so expensive and just not
worth it. So many people choked themselves by accident. It was terrible.
Jordache.
Lee, how about you? What is your rating and scale?
I thought it was relatively entertaining, and I did watch it a lot when I was a kid. So I'll give it 6.5 Converse.
All right.
Nice.
I'll go next. I didn't enjoy it, but I did enjoy it, if that's, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's one of those where I didn't love it, but I still enjoyed it. And I appreciated it more discussing this. I think, you know, I like our plan for where we're going with this. And I feel mm-hmm. like it's got potential. I would go with 5.2 Videodromes. Like, I just really like that set. Like, I like the music video. Like, I would go Dance Terribly there. I feel like that's got potential. Jer, on to you.
So this is a terrible movie, but I really, really liked watching it. So I'm going to have to bump up what my normal rating would be because it was just so dang fun. That said, it's really bad. So I'm going to give it 6.8 not Cyndi Laupers.
Bizarro Cyndi Laupers.
Cyndi Loopers.
Sandy Loopers.
Candy Looper. And Andy, you are up last.
Similar to you, Jer, I thought this movie was absolutely terrible. But I did enjoy it. And I may have said this earlier. Of all the terrible movies that we've done, this is the one that I feel has the greatest potential for a good remake.
Agreed.
That being said, it's a terrible movie. So I'm going to give it 3.9 grand entrances into a movie theater.
Nice.
That was a grand entrance.
It was a grand entrance.
I have yet to see a better one.
That is my nightmare. As we venture out into the world of potentially going to see movies again, that, like, when I think about, like, what the movie going experience is like and how it can be bad, like, sure enough, going into a movie theater and just just yelling at everything, like, oh no, movie theaters, ah. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's going to be okay, but that's like my worst nightmare. Hey, is people speaking up. I mean, like, whispering at a movie is enough, but let alone,
you know, they also had the lights on in the movie theater, I think, the whole time.
Yeah. Maybe it was just a trailer the whole time.
It was just not, like, not a good venue for watching a movie.
It's true.
Anyhow.
It's true.
Not if they allow kung fu fighting in there.
It's true.
If I was going to watch a movie, I'd go to the Videodrome at the end where she plugged in all the Bruce Lee highlights for him.
Yeah.
Like, I'd watch a movie there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, that wraps up this second part of our discussion of The Last Dragon with that the whole dang movie. I like our remake, gents. I think this is really good. I think there's some strong potential there. I think we got rid of the right things, and I think we kept the right things, and I think we added the right things. So, well done. Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Google Play and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. We're also on Spotify and on YouTube. Social media-wise, we are on Facebook, search for Remakers Mark, Twitter, at Remakers Mark, and Instagram, at Remakers Mark Podcast. So please join in the discussion there as well. So, as always, gentlemen, it pleases me to no end to be looking at your faces in person once again. I mean, it's always great, but this year was especially great, and I think it was a wonderful time. And I'm glad that we agreed that Eddie Arcadian never existed and never will. So I think we made exactly. That's the right choice. Until the next time, gentlemen, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.